Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Primary Election Day 2024. Polls are open till 8 p.m. tonight. And as Marty has implored you, exercise your right to vote.
Or don't complain, man. If you don't vote, don't whine. By the way, once you vote, give us a yell. I want to see if anyone's turning up at the polling places. 866-391-1020. 866-391-1020.
We start with a story of a new study about AFib. What is AFib and why it's more common and dangerous in younger people than previously thought?
Yeah, this is kind of an eye-opening study, Larry. I know several people right now that have AFib. It's very, very dangerous.
And we are joined by Dr. Aditya Bhosle from UPMC. Doctor, good morning.
Good morning, Marty and Larry. Thank you for having me.
Well, we appreciate it. Really important information. I mean, first of all, what is AFib for those that don't know?
So atrial fibrillation actually is the most common heart rhythm problem in the world, and in the U.S., millions are affected by it. And it's an irregular heart rhythm that arises from the top chambers of the heart and makes your heart race, and therefore patients feel palpitations, shortness of breath, lightheadedness, or dizziness. Mostly seen in the older population, with an average age in the late 70s.
And you are a cardiac electrophysiologist, which means this is what you do. You study this. What causes AFib?
So we do understand that there are some known factors, and AFib should be thought of as a lifestyle disease at this point is what we are focusing on, because risk factors of hypertension, diabetes, obesity, sleep apnea, and the lifestyle changes have been directly associated in the older population with occurrence of atrial fibrillation, along with the standard things like having a prior heart attack that makes your heart weaker or having congestive heart failure.
Doc, here's what's eye-opening about your research, and I think it's astounding. Congratulations. So, Larry, they looked at about 68,000 patients. The old school way of thinking was about 2% of them have AFib. Doc, you found a much, much higher number of younger folks, did you not, sir?
That is true. So if you look at our system, we see a lot of atrial fibrillation patients. And traditionally, other studies have suggested, and even CDC estimates are from a population, the prevalence of atrial fibrillation in the young, say, for example, less than 65 or less than 50, is pretty low. And the highest number that has been talked about is maybe about close to 10% or so in studies from California. But we saw that of the patients seeking care in the UPMC system, nearly a quarter actually are less than 65. And that's a high number. And that's what's prompted us to do this study, because in our clinics and hospitals, we were noticing that, oh boy, we do see a lot of younger patients with atrial fibrillation now.
What do we do with this information
now, Larry? Great question, man.
So I think part of the study tries to reach into the answer for exactly your very important question is, what are the risk factors that drive atrial fibrillation in this young population? The old traditional thought is, oh, you have what's called lone atrial fibrillation, meaning your heart is structurally normal, you have no risk factors, and by some genetic predisposition, maybe you have atrial fibrillation. Well, that's not true. I think we see here that at least in this Pennsylvania cohort, younger patients have increasing amount of cardiovascular risk factors, of hypertension, undiagnosed, of BMI being more than what it should be, and of sleep apnea that's untreated. And that drives all the cardiovascular complications of having atrial fibrillation at a younger age.
But what am I supposed to do about this?
So I think the take-home message is risk factor management. So seeing your physicians or your cardiologist and figuring out, am I leading a healthy life? Is my blood pressure under control? Am I on a track to lose weight? Am I being investigated for sleep apnea if I have atrial fibrillation? So minimizing the risk factor burden, and certainly there are studies not from us, from, say, Australia, that suggest that just cutting down on alcohol, losing weight, and increasing your cardiorespiratory fitness reduces atrial fibrillation. So I think instead of more pills, that should be the first go.
Doc, before we let you go, and I appreciate this, this is good stuff, what should I feel if I'm having a problem?
And then what do you do?
Right. I think both very important questions. Majority of patients do have symptoms. Symptoms of heart racing, symptoms of palpitations, squirmy sensation in the chest, when they feel their pulse at home with their, you know, nowadays with Apple Watches and home monitors, they'll notice an irregular pulse, an elevated pulse. Sometimes patients come to the hospital with just complaints of chest pain or shortness of breath. So I think seeking attention, even if you are young, not blowing it off, and getting an ECG or some kind of monitor so that we can either confirm or reject the diagnosis of atrial fibrillation would be the next step.
Tremendous information, Dr. Aditya Bhosle at UPMC.
Kind of scary, too.
Thanks, Doc, for sharing the information.
Thanks, Doc.
Thank you for having me.
Download the free Odyssey app. Take us with you wherever you go. AUDACY. Big story at the Supreme Court level.
It's actually fascinating. So when you're downtown and if you see homeless people, most people are annoyed. Most people are afraid. Most people want them the hell out of there. Pretty much. That's a fair assessment of that situation. The Supreme Court right now is deciding whether or not it's against the law to be homeless. Okay? So, a headline in the Wall Street Journal this morning, which is pretty cool. Supreme Court signals sympathy for cities plagued by homeless camps. Hey, Raz.
Yeah.
Listen to this. One of the justices said, how is sleeping in a tent any different than, and I'm paraphrasing, than falling asleep on a beach blanket? And how is falling asleep on a park bench any different than being homeless in a tent? And they couldn't find one instance of anyone ever being written a ticket for this sort of activity, falling asleep. Ever. Not one ticket.
The law that they're arguing is a law written in Grants Pass, Oregon.
Yep.
Forbids people from using blankets, pillows, or cardboard boxes as protection from the elements while they're sleeping inside the city limits. So that's what the case is over.
And at the end of the day, Raz, this could change the game completely. If the Supreme Court rules that you can sleep wherever the hell you want, seriously, because we don't tag everybody who's asleep, which is actually true, right?
Right.
One of the arguments they're making that's interesting to me is the lawyers have pointed to a Supreme Court ruling back in 1962 that declared the Eighth Amendment of the Constitution prohibits punishing people based on their status.
Boom. And check this out. This is actually fascinating to me, and I'm trying to get Vic Walczak, who's one of my favorite people, who's with the ACLU. He's a really good attorney. So John Roberts said, municipalities have competing priorities. Do you build a homeless shelter or take care of lead pipes? What if there's not enough fire protection? Which one do you prioritize? Right, Raz?
Right.
Think about it.
Tough choices.
There is no way in hell we can just dump on the homeless folks and say it's their fault. What annoys the hell out of me with Americans today is they get so bitter about this. Why don't you get a job? That's their comeback. And at the end of the day, it's very, very complex. And this discussion is fascinating.
Marty, I would also like to point out that the Post-Gazette had a really, really good article on homelessness over the weekend. And it shared the story of two people who were homeless through really no fault of their own. They were getting jobs or already had jobs. And these were not people who were dealing with mental illness or addiction. These are people who lost their homes for one reason or another. Like fire, for example.
I read that, and that was in the front page of the paper or one of the sections on Sunday. And one of the things that jumped out to me, they said, oh, where we're living in this little enclave, it was okay except for the rats getting into their food supply and being cold once in a while.
One of the officers who testified, Larry, said, if a stargazer, this is actually fascinating, if a stargazer wants to take a blanket or sleeping bag out at night and watch the stars and fall asleep, Santamayor said this, you arrest them. It's a tough one, man. This is going to be fascinating.
Yeah, so it's coming from the highest court in the land, and it'll be interesting to see what they rule, because this will have a resonating effect in cities across America, including our own.
Hey, I want to talk about something personal. One of my boys, one of my favorite people, we've been close friends for almost 20 years, Norm Candelore. Sarah's Candy, Candelore's Barking Beauties, great man. His mom passed, Elizabeth Candelore. Dorothy Candelore, apologize. Dorothy was 90 years old, and she was at Grandview Estates Memory Loss Facility, and Norm wanted to thank them. It's tough. She's 90. Norm says this morning, look, I love my mom, and I miss her dearly. But if I could sign a contract today to live to 90, I would do that. And then you said something, Larry, that...
It's your mom.
That's right.
There's nobody on earth that loves you like your mom.
It's really true. And I sit in my own house with my wife and Vince.
When you lose your mother, regardless of her age at the time of loss, it's lifelong loss for you.
And I had the blessed opportunity of meeting Dorothy Candelore many, many times, and she's a wonderful woman. Norm is one of my favorite people, and we love you, Norm. Thanks, brother.
This is the Big K Morning Show, and once again, we welcome Allegheny County Sheriff Kevin Krause, who joins us this morning. Sheriff, good morning.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
What's up, man? So, this Magistrate Orenstein, there's a couple issues here. This case is just one of a thousand. This guy does not believe in setting bond for anyone. They proved it in this case and many others. He also doesn't sign warrants, Larry, like important warrants. He just doesn't believe in them. And so what he's done is tossed the legal system out the window. But let me remind folks who right now are picking their noses, too lazy to go out and vote. The reason why this guy has a job, Larry, as a magistrate, is because they got the progressives fired up and a couple thousand people voted this guy in office in Lawrenceville. So shame on all those people in Lawrenceville who are too lazy to vote. And that's why this guy has this gig. Sheriff, it's fascinating about this case. Why is this guy, why is grabbing him so important to you, sir? Why?
Primarily, here's why it's important. I mean, inherently, we do this job every day. And certainly, his decisions are putting my people at risk. We don't know who's on the other side of that door. You know, when warrants are issued and we have to go out and find this individual, because clearly this magistrate, and I'm gonna call him by name, Orenstein, let this guy out. He wants to play by his own rules, which triggers common pleas judges to issue warrants where we're ordered to go out and apprehend this person and bring him before the court, which he's entitled to due process. And, you know, we get that. I mean, that's what we do. But clearly he's demonstrated he's a threat to the public, and he's a threat to my deputies, and he's a threat to police officers, you know, across this county.
You know, I have been out with their warrant teams. They're very aggressive. They're very assertive. They're very successful. They work their asses off. They have for years, and they always do. There are literally thousands of outstanding warrants right now. Is that fair, Kevin?
Yeah, I thousands. Yeah, I mean, yeah. That's what we do every day, and you know, we aggressive. I mean, we tailor each case.
Of course, you do a hell of a job, but
to try and bring people into custody and bring them before the court, and we do it with the common goal of doing it safely.
But he kind of spits in the face of everything your guys do. Says to hell with law enforcement, to hell with making an arrest, to hell with the fact that this guy was already out on bond, already has a warrant. Go home, sir. It really does anger you, and Kevin does not get angry. Is that fair, sir?
It's frustrating. I mean, it is frustrating because it clearly he's a threat, you know, and now we have to engage. And it's threatening. And I don't want to see any of my people get hurt. I don't want to see, you know, this individual get hurt. I don't want to see the public get hurt. So we try to, you know, bring him before the court with, you know, without injury. And it's frustrating that this magistrate puts this person back into the society, you know, after he's clearly demonstrated he's a threat. And that's frustrating to us, and it's getting old.
Well, I imagine, man.
I can't imagine. You do your job, your officers do their job, and then now you've got to do a different job with the same individual that puts everybody at risk.
Yeah, and clearly, he's demonstrated he carries illegal firearms.
Right.
And, you know, what does that put law enforcement up against? You know, the state troopers that risk their lives chasing him through Sharpsburg.
Right.
You know, and puts all those people at risk. I mean, what does this guy say to the people and the residents and citizens and visitors of Sharpsburg? We're just going to throw them right back into the community.
Disgusting, man. Hey, Kevin.
It is.
Hey, is there a chance? My boy Barry sends me this intriguing question. Your guys grab him today, let's say. Is there a chance he could get back in front of Orenstein? Could that happen again?
I can't answer that.
Right. But he could.
I would hope that there's a mechanism in place where that doesn't happen. You know, and again, I get it. Not everybody needs to be in jail.
Right.
But there are people that need to be contained. And again, they're definitely, you know, they have due process, and that's what we operate on. But, I mean, it's just throwing dangerous people back into the society. What does that say to the people, the taxpayers?
Right on.
You know, I mean, the people that expect law enforcement to keep you safe, and you can talk about the criminal justice system,
right,
and can we do better? Sure.
Yeah.
But people have an expectation to be safe. And
well, when it comes to violent criminals and those
ridiculous
who have illegal weapons, yeah, there's a difference between them and everybody else. Violent criminals, it's different. It just is.
There's three warrants for this guy right now. And so people know this, Kevin, you have a team actively looking for him as we speak, right?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. And our goal is, you know, to swiftly and quickly bring him into custody without any additional detriment to the community, you know, without injury to anybody, and bring him into the system, bring him before the court.
Right on.
And it's just a shame that this guy wants to play by his own rules.
It annoys the hell out of me. And so the presiding judge here, President Judge, wanted him taken off the bench and retrained for 3 months. That was the plan. State folks said, hell no.
Can't do that.
He is untouchable.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Well, be safe in your efforts to bring him to justice. And, Sheriff, appreciate the time this morning. Thank you.
All right, guys.
Thanks very much. Love him.
All right.
Love him.
All right.
Kevin Kraus, Allegheny County Sheriff on the Big K Morning
Show. The crap
show,
man.
And we have William from Lawrenceville. You're on the Big K Morning Show, William. What's on your mind?
Good morning, gents. With Magistrate Orenstein. He seems to have just ignored his duties, ignored his oath. And I just wonder why no state representative has initiated impeachment proceedings against him. That's where it starts.
No, it does not. It does not. The state judicial board would do that, and they're looking at him to see if he violated any sort of ethics or code of conduct. It's not easy, man. It just isn't.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's not. Rick.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, the last caller obviously is different than what I'm about to say is, but Lawrenceville is like a mega progressive neighborhood anymore.
It's true.
It's not what it was in the 80s
and
the 70s.
He's right.
And if the people there vote for this Orenstein to be in, who are we, obviously non-Lawrenceville natives, or not natives, but residents, who are we to criticize it? That's what they want. That's their idea of justice.
He's probably right. Can't argue with you.
All right, Rick.
It's a great call.
It is. We'll see what happens next.
My man.
Coming up right after the news at the top of this hour.
Trump. You could write a script and you could send it to Netflix. And Larry's done this, by the way. Written movies and produced really good movies.
Well, they would say, this is preposterous.
It's a load of crap.
So you're telling me a former president is on a criminal trial, which has never happened in the history of this country, in arguably the most famous city, maybe outside of Rome on earth.
He's talking smack every day. It's actually funny.
And one of the first witnesses for the prosecution is named Pecker,
right,
from the National Enquirer. And it's about, among other things, hiding hush money
for a hooker.
Allegedly paid to Stormy Daniels, who was an adult film actress.
Hooker. And that no one really seems to care that he was sleeping with this woman, had sex with this woman, but how he made the payment. We just assume that's what Trump does. This is where we're at, brother.
You know what? You're right. Nobody says.
No one cares. It's just, this is what men do.
Well, they didn't care what Bill Clinton did either.
What did Bill do?
In the Oval Office.
He's another pain in the ass. Do your impression, please.
I just want to say I love Pittsburgh. Love it. Love it downtown. People everywhere.
I think that's my favorite Larry impression. Bill Clinton.
I wonder what the other former presidents are thinking.
Come on.
To themselves.
Come on.
Republican or Democrat, I'm just speculating.
They can't stand Trump.
So we're going to talk to a prominent defense attorney.
Phil.
Coming up right after the news with Paul Rasmussen.